I'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Today is February 23rd, 2024. We are in the Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Mears, Representative Dibert, Representative McCabe, Representative Sadler, Representative Baker, and myself, Chair Tom McKay. We have a quorum to do business. I would like to thank the staff, Cheryl, Zach, Trevor, and Ed today for helping us go through this meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to, I beg your pardon. Representative Jenny Armstrong is online. Rep Armstrong, I didn't see you up there. Can you hear us okay?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay, let us know if you lose the connection and you can't hear us well. So everyone, please silence your cell phones. So today we have five items on our agenda. We have a HDR 20, a resolution regarding NPRA, and four bills, 296, 282, 223, and 177. So we will try to get through that list by 3 o'clock sharp, and anything we don't have time for, we'll roll to Monday. So first up is HDR 20, House Joint Resolution 20. We'll bring that before the committee, and we will ask for an introduction to the resolution by Representative Baker and staff. I think you can, do you want him to stay there or go back? I think you can stay here. Go back. Okay, I'm wrong. You have to leave and come back, Representative Baker. So please state your name for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Thomas Baker, representative from House District 40. Through the chair, thank you to the House Resource Committee for allowing us to present House Joint Resolution 20 today. HDR 20 urges the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, to withdraw a proposed rule affecting the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska, the NPRA. The resolution also urges meaningful engagement with tribes, local governments, and impacted communities on this topic. If this rule is implemented as proposed, the BLM will have taken the governing authority for the whole of the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska into their own hands without regard for the congressionally passed mandates nor the local population's desires. The proposed rule would allow BLM to manage the lands as de facto wilderness, possibly precluding future community infrastructure, housing developments, access to ANC land, Alaska Native Corporation land, access to native allotments, not to mention undermining the very reason why the NPRA was created. And given the ongoing turmoil in global geopolitics, now is not the time to gamble on energy security for our country. Much as this body did with the Willow Project, a unified voice from the state of Alaska, local, regional, state, and federal elected representation is necessary to push back against this federal overreach. I brought forth this resolution because the BLM's proposed rule is one of the most pressing issues facing my constituents and organizations in District 40 today. The proposed rule was submitted to OIRA, the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, late last week and will have a minimum 30-day turnaround time for the final decision, so time is of the essence. I hope that members of the committee will join us in urging withdrawal of the NPRA rule, since it is simply bad policy for Alaska. I'd like to turn it over to my staff to continue with some of the details of HDR 20 and the reasons behind bringing this resolution forth.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Steve St. Clair, staff to Representative Baker. We have several individuals for invited testimony for any questions that the committee may have. We have two experts that will stay online after the presentation to answer any specific questions. First up, we have Ms. Doreen LeWitt for invited testimony.
Levitt.
Okay, Doreen Levitt, I'm looking for you. I don't see Doreen on the list here, Jens. Doreen Levitt, can you hear me? No?
We can go with the next person on the list.
Andy Mack?
Andy Mack, yes, sir.
Okay, for invited testimony now, we have Mr. Andy Mack. Andy, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, Andy, please state your name and your affiliation and for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Andy Mack. I am the CEO of Kupik Corporation. We're the Alaska Native Village Corporation for the community of Nowitzik, Alaska. Committee members, Mr. Chairman, we appreciate the chance to say a few words about this proposed resolution. Broadly speaking, we want to go on record and say that we support the resolution. Kupik Corporation is the private landowner of 145,000 acres in and around the community of Nowitzik, has been intimately involved in most of the decisions, in fact, all of the decisions involving the NPRA, whether it be protections or development, for the last 20, 25 years. We comment extensively in great detail. Important for everybody to know that, you know, we appreciate and understand how important this is to the state of Alaska, and that's why it is appropriate that this committee and hopefully the bodies, the House and the Senate, take this resolution up, because it will affect, in our opinion, some very important aspects of what's going on in the NPRA. The other thing I'd like to say is I'm a former commissioner of DNR, and the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska is the most prospective area for oil and gas development in Alaska in the foreseeable future. There certainly are other areas, but I think if you really valued them and ranked them, the NPRA would be at the top of your list. So we always weigh in, and we've historically weighed in taking a real clear approach to activities, development activities, where we always want to protect the land, subsistence for our community, and for our residents, for our tribal members. And then after we've spent some time looking at development proposals, we think it can be done in a balanced manner. We start to engage on development issues and try to make sure that any development is mitigated to the extent it can reasonably be to avoid impacts. We did that with the Willow Project, and we at least initially expressed a host of concerns with some of the development polls we saw. Eventually, we got to the point with Willow where we felt it was a really solid project that had been mitigated to the point where 93% of the oil under the current plan, 93% of the available resource would be accessed by the project, but they had reduced those impacts. So in many, many circumstances over the last 25 years, Kupik has been at the front of protecting the land. The problem, as we see it, with this proposed rule for special areas is it does a couple of things. The most impactful and most concerning thing that this does is that we think that it clearly will impact subsistence activities. I'm quoting from the proposed rule, and it says the Bureau will provide appropriate access to and within the special areas for subsistence purposes to the extent consistent with ensuring maximum protection of all significant resource values that are found in such areas. We think that is a bright line sentence written into the proposed rule, which causes on its face and alone such great concern that this rule has to be backed up. It has to be, in our opinion, they have to go back to the drawing board if they want to move forward, and it should be withdrawn as the resolution suggests. Because the one thing that is critically important to our community, and we think to the communities of Upiaga, Akasuk, Konotupik Pass, all the communities in the North Slope, is access to subsistence. And here they're actually saying right in the proposed rule that there's other values that would be more important than subsistence. And we disagree with that, and we disagree with it strongly. The other thing that we see in the rule that really causes us significant concern is that the rule, while it's proposed as a rule that covers the special areas, and there's the Colville River Special Area, and there's the Tushbuck Lake Special Area, and the Woodcook Uplands, and the Kasailik Lagoon, and there's maybe five special areas in the NPRA, the proposed rule is written so that it connects the limitations that it imposes in the special areas to the other areas which are currently and in the future should be available for leasing. And it connects them so closely in a legal way that the spillage from the proposed rule, which was in its title intended to only affect special areas, will definitely spill out into areas that we think provide a pathway to development in the NPRA, and that's generally in this east to west pattern that you see with Alpine, Greater Moose's Tooth, now Willow. We think those impacts are probably not unintended. They were probably intended when they wrote this rule, and that's the second reason why we strongly oppose this. So, Mr. Chairman, I've probably used my time here. I'm happy to stay on the line. I'm happy to answer any questions. It's something that we appreciate the representative introducing. We hope the committee supports it, ultimately both bodies. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mack, very much. And yes, please stay on the line in case there are questions. Next on the list, I have Mayor Josiah Puckatuck, our former colleague here in the legislature. It looks like maybe I have DJ Fausk on the line to take his place. DJ, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that. Your former colleague, Mayor Josiah Puckatuck, is traveling today and apologizes to the committee, especially Representative Baker, but wanted to thank him for introducing this very important resolution.
Okay,
if I may, can you all hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you, DJ. Could you please state your name and your position and your affiliation and begin your testimony, and we'll try to hold them to 5 minutes. We got a lot to get done today, so please proceed.
Yes, sir. I'll be brief. My name is DJ Fausky. I'm the Government and External Affairs Director for the North Slope Borough. I was born and raised on the slope, and I've been with the North Slope Borough for 16 years. I'm calling on behalf of the North Slope Borough today and Mayor Josiah Puckatuck, who was elected this fall. For those that don't know, the North Slope Borough is a home rule government located above the Arctic Circle. Represents over 10,000 residents in the 8 communities of our region. The borough's jurisdiction includes the entire National Petroleum Reserve and the villages within it, which are Nuiqsut, Otkusuk, Uktiavik, Barrow, and Wainwright. I hope you all also received our trilateral letter, should be in your packets, that was sent to you by the North Slope Borough, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, and the Nupia community of the Arctic Slope. I know members from those organizations will be testifying later, so I'll let them speak on behalf of their respective organizations. We speak today in strong support of HDR 20, which urges the proposed Bureau of Land Management regulations affecting the National Petroleum Reserve, urging meaningful engagement with tribes, local governments, and affected communities. The new regulations were announced in early September, and would drastically change the terms Congress set for the NPRA. The regulations were announced without consultation with Alaska Natives or our respective organizations located within America's Arctic. Every established North Slope-based government entity, tribe, and regional corporation, including Kupik, asked for a simple 90-day extension, given the life-altering impacts this new rule would have for our economy, healthcare, subsistence, culture, and overall quality of life. Even the Alaska Federation of Natives also asked for a 90-day extension due to the impacts on subsistence hunting. We were all denied, received a small 30-day extension. Our governor, our congressional delegation also asked and were denied. We honestly don't know who BLM is listening to. As you know, Mr. Chairman, the NPRA was set aside by Congress for natural resource development, balanced with conservation. It's one of America's great national security assets, but the Biden administration is determined to shut it down, as it has shut down the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or the 1002 area, near Koktovik. The part of the refuge that was set aside for not only oil and gas development, but access to the land for subsistence. Our residents have been ignored at every turn. This rule will also negatively impact our ability to increase oil flowing through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Our governments, organizations, and residents will be negatively impacted by the loss of revenue, jobs, and major impacts to our ability to fund Arctic-based scientific research and the small amount of animals we harvest for subsistence each year. Our region, we're the original conservationists, and we read about these proposed rules in the newspaper. Each of our organizations is based in the Arctic and always will be. We strongly support this resolution, and we want to thank our one District 40 representative, Mr. Thomas Baker, who serves a district that was previously served by our mayor now, Mr. Josiah Puckentuck. It's a district with over 20 communities, makes up an area larger than the state of Minnesota. And Mr. Baker, we appreciate your leadership and sponsor for this important resolution. We'll help in any way we can, and if the committee has any questions, please feel free to ask. I'm by no means an expert, but I'm happy to get you guys comments too in writing if the questions are over my area of expertise.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fowski. I'd like to announce that Representative Wright has joined us, and Representative McCabe does have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And DJ, welcome. Thanks for standing in for Josiah today. Last year, I started reading this book by Alex Epstein called The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. And Josiah and I had a conversation about the life expectancy of the North Slope natives 100 years ago before oil versus their life expectancy now. And I wonder if you could comment on how the younger generation, which you're part of on the North Slope, view oil. Josiah was excited to tell me that the life expectancy has grown exponentially since the discovery of oil up there. So I don't know if you have a comment on that or not, but I'd appreciate anything you have to say.
Yes, sir, Mr. Co-Chairman McCabe. It would be nice if I had one of our biologists or someone from our health clinic on, but that comment is actually correct. I know this from my own family's personal experience. My late father was a waterman in the early 70s on the North Slope. Before him, his older brother, Dave Fowski, was a teacher for the Bureau of Indian Affairs in the mid-60s. At that time, the life expectancy, even in the mid-60s, was, I believe, 56 years old. It's grown over, I believe now the average life expectancy up there is somewhere between 68 and 69. So we've benefited greatly, not in terms of finances, but basic amenities and services like clinics, schools, roads, the things that a lot of our neighbors in the lower 48 probably take for granted. You know, it's the North Slope Borough is not Dubai. It's just turned, actually, it's barely over 50 years old. So we're still trying to catch up with not only the lower 48, but the rest of Alaska. We feel ConocoPhillips has I mean, their work dates back to, I think, President Clinton's second term, and then the original rule and proposal was done in President Obama's first term. They've met every step and criteria, public meeting. We've supported their efforts at every turn. So I really hope the body, just like last year, the Willow resolution, I believe it passed 60-0. Mayor Josiah Puckentuck was able to take that to Washington, D.C., our congressional delegation, especially Senator Dan Sullivan, read that on the Senate floor. And I think it's kind of nice to see that when something passes 60-0 down in Juneau, you know it has the state support behind it. And I appreciate all the efforts, again, by your committee, the governor, and Representative Baker to see this one through as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fausk. Please stand in the line in case there are other questions. Next up, we have Bridget Anderson with Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. Bridget, can you hear me okay? Hello, Bridget.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Through the chair.
Representative Baker.
Through the chair, it was made aware to me that both Ms. Anderson and Ms. Leavitt could hear what we were saying but couldn't be heard. I believe they were encouraged to go through the Teams link, but I don't see them on the screen there.
Okay, gents, technical difficulties. Why don't you work on that? And next I have Kara Moriarty with AOGA. Kara, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So, Ms. Moriarty, please put your name and affiliation on the record and begin your testimony. Try to give us 5 minutes or less.
I'm going to do it. Set the timer.
Thank you.
Chairman McKay and members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kara Moriarty, and I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, commonly referred to as AOGA. Thank you for the invitation to provide testimony on House Joint Resolution 20, which we unanimously support. As you know, AOGA represents the majority of oil and gas companies exploring, developing, producing, transporting, marketing, and refining in our state. Our mission is to advocate for the long-term viability of the oil and gas industry, which is critical to Alaska's economy. Our recent McKinley Research Group report indicated that oil and gas is, quote, a significant source, unquote, of jobs, accounting for almost 70,000 jobs across the state. The report also concluded our industry has the, quote, highest economic impact, unquote, of any other industry in Alaska and is clearly, quote, part of Alaska's future, unquote. The report indicated the oil and gas industry expects to spend over $14 billion in capital expenditures in a five-year period, from last year, 2023 to 2028, with a large portion of that spending expected to be in the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska, or NPRA. Just this construction season alone, over 1,800 people are working in NPRA. The future of Alaska's economy is one of the many reasons why the Alaska legislature should support the resolution before you. House Joint Resolution 20 appropriately requests the Bureau of Land Management to withdraw its proposed NPRA rule, which, as currently written, would be a complete shift in BLM management of the area. The proposed rule presents many new substantive standards and procedural requirements, which would have significant and adverse impacts on future proposals in NPRA. Additionally, the proposed rule conflicts with congressional intent of promoting private oil and gas leasing in the NPRA and impacts the rights of current NPRA leaseholders, raising into question the legal durability of this proposal. The committee has a copy of our comprehensive comments to the BLM outlining our many concerns in greater detail. House Bill 20 not only outlines the ramifications of this rule would have on our state, but also describes the lack of appropriate consultation with local tribes and stakeholders. So in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, AOGA would like to thank Representative Baker for introducing House Joint Resolution 20. By supporting this resolution, the Alaska Legislature will continue its commitment to a fair and balanced regulatory approach for the long-term economic and environmental sustainability of the NPRA. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Moriarty, very much. Please stay on the line. In case there are questions as we move along. I now see Bridget Anderson on the team screen. Bridget, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony, Ms. Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bridget Anderson, and I serve as Senior Vice President of External Affairs for Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, or ASRC. I first want to thank Representative Baker for introducing this resolution. I think one of the most important parts of this resolution is the fact that he is highlighting the federal government's obligation to consult with federally recognized tribes as well as Alaska Native corporations. There has been a unified voice from our region of our elected officials who oppose the proposed rule on the management of the NPRA. And I think it is extremely important for those in the legislature to understand where the elected leadership on the North Slope is coming from in our opposition. And it lies, as BJ shared, from the borough's perspective, the economic impacts, but also the lack of meaningful engagement, early engagement, and lack of the communication by this administration prior to the rule being released in its draft form. And since September 6th, the lack of answers that our leadership has received from the government on why the proposed rule was necessary and whether or not they were going to actually follow their own processes with respect to consultation. Just for a little bit more background, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, ASRC represents our eight communities that DJ also shared. We have 14,000 Unifac shareholders. ASRC is also a landowner with lands within the MPRA and adjacent to the MPRA. And so any actions by the federal government that could impact our lands is something that ASRC will continue to engage on. We obviously have concerns, I think Mr. Mack had shared, with access to our lands and whether both for cultural and economic opportunity. Without having to repeat, I think, what everyone else has said, you know, ASRC strongly supports Representative Baker's resolution, and if the legislature were to adopt this resolution, they would be echoing the unified support for this resolution coming from our region. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Anderson. I neglected to announce that Representative Rauscher has joined us. So do we, one more try with Doreen Levitt? No, not going to happen. Okay.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Doreen.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, you're there, but you don't show up on the screen. I'm sorry.
I'm sitting in the room with Bridget Anderson.
Okay. Okay, Doreen, welcome to our House Resources meeting. We'd like to hear your testimony on HJR 20. And can you please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the House Resource Committee. My name is Doreen Levitt, and I am representing the Inupiat community of the Arctic Slope, also known as ICAS. I am a resident of Upavik, a tribal citizen of the Native Village of Barrow, and a tribal citizen of the Inupiat community of the Arctic Slope. ICAS is a regionally federally recognized tribe under the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934 and its tribal constitution. Membership of ICAS includes the native villages of Utqusuk, Utqavik, Point Lay, Oktovik, Nuuksit, and Point Hope, and native village of Wainwright, and Anuktuvik Pass, and all of their tribal citizens. We have over 14,000 tribal citizens. All eight of our communities and nine federally recognized tribes are impacted directly by decisions about the federal lands in the North Slope, including within NPRA, which is fully encompassed by the North Slope Borough. The tribes have a legal entitlement to proper consultation. Proper notice of consultation did not occur with ICAS when the proposed rule for the management and protection of the national was announced on September 6, 2023. The tribes were left out of the decision-making process, which we have a right to be included in. Therefore, the federal government violated their legal obligation to honor government-to-government relationships with federally recognized tribes. This has a direct impact on our lands and our people. On September 8, 2023, the proposed rule was published to the Federal Register with only a 60-day comment period and ruling of not economically significant. Changing the way in which land is managed will not only affect the tax base of our region, but also access to privately held lands in the region, all of which have a significant impact on the economics of the people that live within the North Slope. ICAS does not agree with the ruling of economically insignificant, which is many reasons why we advocate today to support HJR 20. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Doreen. Please stay on the line in case there are questions. Which brings me to, are there any questions from committee members today for our testifiers? All right, seeing none, I will now like to open public testimony for HJR 20. Public testimony is now open for HGR 20. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on this resolution? All right, seeing none, is there anyone online that would like to testify? Okay, who do we have?
Cheryl.
Okay, Cheryl Bowie from Colorado.
Yep.
Oh, okay, Cheryl Bowie
from.
Sorry, Cheryl, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Cheryl, would you please state your full name and your affiliation and your location? And how about 3 minutes for testimony, okay?
Awesome, thank you. My name is Cheryl Bowie. I was born in Kotzebue, Alaska. I had to relocate to Colorado for surgery during the pandemic. That's not available in Alaska. So I'm just calling in support of this bill. It's a very challenging environment down here. Colorado is currently trying to stop all fossil fuel development by the end of the, I think by 2030. And so it's really kind of a hot political button here. It's really challenging as an Alaska native. And I'm just kind of giving you a little bit of my experience. You know, they outsourced all the oil and gas management, similar to what Alyeska Pipeline does, to Canada. And so it would be really nice if we had these jobs instead. I really don't appreciate, as an Alaska native, well, first of all, I wasn't enrolled properly. I was born in Kotzebue in the 60s, and I don't know why I'm not a village member, but I'm a member of NANA and Kikiktegrek. And but it's really challenging, and I think they're very threatened by Alaska Native people from the Arctic. And a lot of people don't even know that there's people that live in the Arctic like us. And so it's been, for me, living down here, a real challenging process to educate people and being gaslit, because the tribes down here have a completely different set of values. So I think it would be really beneficial to push like education for like regulatory education and training, helping people understand, you know, the impetus of the law, you know, what the law is meant for, why we have laws, like, you know, the law is meant to have a cure. And when we establish agreements in the law, that they need to be followed. And I think that it's part an education issue. I've been thrown out of Interior Department meetings. And, you know, and I think that we need to really push the respect for open meeting laws. And really kind of communicate in a way that helps other people understand that we need sustainable infrastructure just as anybody else. We need basic infrastructure, and that, you know, we really depend on oil and gas. And even though I'm down here, if we had more developed infrastructure and sustainable healthcare systems, and kind of less politically divisive stuff going on, then I could be in the Northwest Arctic. My region, the NANA region, directly benefits from the oil and gas industry through contracting and compacting agreements with the North Slope. And so, you know, early on that helped me pay my way through college. And even though it's an Associates of Applied Science, you know, it was very, very helpful for me when I was a young mother. And so it actually helped me pay my way through college.
Okay, Cheryl.
And, you know, I have a...
Can you wrap it up, please? Yeah. Can you please wrap it up?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to call and say my support for this. I don't think that, you know, people don't understand we don't even have roads. And I think that we need to communicate who we are better in a way to gain more support for this, because I really do support oil and gas development in a sustainable manner.
Okay, thank you very much, Cheryl, and we wish you all the best on your recovery from surgery. Is there another person that wishes to testify? Okay, I have my staff's handwriting isn't that good. Okay, Nagruk Harcherek, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. I hope I said your name correctly. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony. 3 minutes, please.
Thank you. Did a very good job with my name. Normally, it's not pronounced that well, but Nagar Karcharik. I'm the president of the Voice of the Arctic Inupiat. We're a nonprofit that advocates on behalf of the people of the North Slope. We have a 24-member board made up of elected leadership throughout our region. That includes folks from the cities, the tribes, Alaska Native corporations, and the region organizations that support our people up there. Essentially, a collective of the leadership on the North Slope, or a majority of. The Voice wrote a similar resolution, 2024-01, opposing the NPRA proposed rule as this one does. The Voice resolution is available online as part of the documents for HJR 20. And the Voice Board also passed a motion yesterday to directly support HJR 20 during our meeting. And we want to say thank you to Representative Baker for introducing HJR 20 and addressing the Voice Board earlier this week. And just to let the committee know that we will be supporting or sending in a letter of support from the Voice in this regard. So thank you.
Okay, very good, Nagrik. Thank you for your testimony very much. Next up, I have Kari Nori. Kari, can you hear me?
Thank you, Chair McKay. Yes, and members of the House Resources Committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Kari Noor, and I serve as the Director of External Affairs for the Alaska Chamber, and I'm testifying today in support of House Joint Resolution 20. The Alaska Chamber was founded in 1953 and is Alaska's most diverse statewide business advocacy organization. Our mission is to promote a healthy business environment in Alaska. The Chamber has more than 700 members and represents businesses of all sizes and industries from across the state, directly representing 58,000 Alaskan workers and representing $4.6 billion in wages. The Alaska Chamber has a longstanding federal priority to support oil and gas exploration and development in Alaska's federal areas, including the National Petroleum Reserve. The NPRA was set aside and designated specifically for petroleum development, balance of conservation to ensure America's national security through access to energy. At a time when oil prices continue to rise and global supply can be easily constricted by foreign governments, investing in domestic oil production is a matter of national and energy security. Responsible development in the NPRA creates enormous economic benefits. Diminished oil production from the NPRA would result in diminished production tax and other tax revenue for the state and local governments in Alaska. This means less revenue for the state of Alaska to provide services to Alaskans. We've also submitted a longer letter of support for this resolution, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Noor. Next, I have Lila Kimbrell. Lila, can you hear me?
I can, Chairman. Thank you.
Okay, Lila, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Layla Kimbrell. I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council for Alaska. We are a member-driven trade association representing the oil and gas, mining, timber, tourism, and fishing industries across the state. I want to testify in support of HJR 20 today and thank Representative Baker for bringing this important issue to the legislature's attention, and I want to thank the committee for bringing this up so quickly today. RDC, as we are affectionately called, has submitted a letter of support already for the record, which includes our comment letter that we made opposing the proposed NPRA rule for your review. So I won't go into that in detail. I know your time is limited today, but just a few points I'd like to emphasize. First is, as others have said, this rule is flawed in many ways, but importantly, urging withdrawal of this rule is not going to compromise any of the already stringent environmental protections in place. The rule, if finalized, will create, however, a presumption against responsible development in the NPRA and on the Alaska's North Slope. As Representative Baker correctly noted earlier in the hearing today, there is a 30-day window that we are currently working with federal agencies on whether this goes into effect or not. So time is of the essence. So if we could just encourage the unanimous support once again, like the legislature came together to do so for the Willow resolution last year, that depoliticized this issue, focused on responsible resource development for all opportunities for Alaskans, and is another strong, important message that I think we need to carry back to D.C. With this resolution once again. So thank you, Representative Baker, and thank you for members of the committee for your urgent action on this resolution.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kimbrell, for your testimony. Is there any other public testimony online? I am told there is not. Is there anyone else wishing to testify in person or otherwise? Okay, and seeing no other public testimony, I will now close public testimony on HDR 20. Now, moving on to amendments, we did not receive any amendments. Is there any amendments from the committee members? I don't see any. So, Representative Rauscher, I would like to have a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I move to report House Joint Resolution 20, Work Order 33-LS1312/A from committee with individual recommendations and one forthcoming zero fiscal note.
Object for the purpose of discussion.
Objection for discussion, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to say I really appreciate that the thrust of this is to include consultation with local stakeholders and meaningful tribal recognition and engagement. We all have the responsibility, regardless of our ancestors, to be looking out for our lands here, no matter where we live in Alaska. I'm in urban Alaska, but I still have a responsibility to the greater state, and I hope that we can all keep that in mind as we do our work here. Thank you. I remove my objection.
All right. Is there any other question from Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not a question per se, but I just want to say, again, I applaud Representative Baker for bringing this forward. Having read through a lot of requests for comments and proposed rules, I just find what the BLM has done is unconscionable in the way they're giving Alaskans the back of their hand, expecting to come up with comments on tremendously complicated and convoluted and, frankly, contradictory and, frankly, I think illegal rules, and hoping that by creeping in incrementalism to continually choke off the lifeblood of our state and deny us the promise of statehood, which is to develop our resources to serve our people, tribes, urban, rural, everybody. And it's very frustrating, and I'm glad that we can speak maybe with a louder voice that falls outside of the deadline for comments, that the secretary will hear and heed the response and request of the people of Alaska. And again, thank you.
Okay, thank you for that, Representative Sadler. Is there any other questions or objections from the committee members? Okay, seeing no further objections, HDR 20 is now passed out of House Resources, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork and set the table for the next bill. Brief at ease. Okay, I'd like to bring House Resources back to order. We've got a tricky one coming up here. This is House Bill 296, known as the Crop Act, and I'll bring HB 296 back before the committee. And to address any remaining questions, we have Brent Goodrum from the Department of Natural Resources, and also supposed to have Brian Scoresby, Rena Miller, and Kevin Higgins. So are there any questions from the committee for any of those individuals? All right, seeing none, we will now move to amendments. We have several amendments. The first one is B9, Representative Mears. Would you like to address your amendment B9?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So do I have to move it?
Brief and easy, excuse me. Back on the record here at House Resources, Representative Rauscher, would you please state your motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to at this time move and to adopt CS for HB 296. Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the work order 33-GH2386/B as our working document for House Bill 296.
Okay, hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Thank you, Representative Rauscher.
You bet.
Now we move to amendments, and I would like to hear a motion to discuss Amendment B9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Move Amendment number one.
Object.
Which is B9, Amendment number one.
Correct. And,
okay, thank you, Representative Mears. And Representative Sadler has objected for the purposes of discussion.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you wish to describe your amendment first, Representative Mears?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Through the chair, Mr. Sadler and the committee, one of the as you know, this is a result of a lot of work that we've been doing on the Food Strategy Task Force in consultation with the Governor's Office and DNR. One of the concerns that task force members had, we heard in public testimony and I heard from committee members, was the purchasing requirements and there being a no dollar limit on some of those purchases. We're actively working on this process and really being able to have some meaningful in-state government purchases of local Alaska foods in the task force. But the current language in this bill misses the mark. We've thought that from task force members. We definitely heard that from the community. So what this amendment does is it removes the majority of that language, and then inserts having to report back to the legislature on data that's collected on the current program. So definitely in support of continuing this purchase preference, just need a little bit more time to work on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mears. Representative Sadler, the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be curious, we have the Deputy Commissioner of the Department who's in charge, who oversees the Division of Agriculture. I appreciate hearing his comments on the record. It's a fairly substantial deletion of the bill, so if I could ask the representative of the department to come before us.
Mr. Goodrum, are you here to represent Mr. Scoresby, and can you comment on the amendment number one?
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum, Department of Natural Resources, yes, I can speak to this. We have heard committee discussion and understand members' concerns about the expanded procurement preference for a period of 5 years. Our hope would be to keep the procurement preference at least for state agencies. However, if the committee decides otherwise, we're pleased to still have Section 24 requiring the annual report to the legislature. We expect this report and other work that DNR will continue to do will develop better data to help support future recommendations to the legislature that will help expand market opportunities for farmers, including leveraging the state's institutional buying power.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up question, Representative Sadler.
And I know that through the chair, Mr. Deputy Commissioner, I know the department's busy. Do you have sufficient resources, staff time to accomplish this review of the preference information? Come back to us later.
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, we do.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very well. So, Mr. Goodrum, does the department accept this amendment number one?
The department does. Through the chair, Deputy okay. Commissioner Goodrum, we do.
Okay, very good. Any further discussion on Amendment 1? Representative Sadler.
Sure, I will withdraw my objection to Amendment 1.
Okay. Is there any further objection to Amendment 1? Hearing none, Amendment 1 is adopted.
Brief at ease.
Okay. Back on the record, House Resources, we are now considering Amendment 2, which is B5, by Representative Mears, and I'd like to have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment B5.
All right.
Object.
Object.
Discussion.
Okay, Representative Rauscher objects for discussion. Representative Mears, can you describe your amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee, one of the
productions we wanted to cut the royalties, and
okay, we had a little background noise from Representative Armstrong. Why don't you start over, Representative Mears?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Our second amendment before us is in regards to the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. The original language in the bill required that the state be in the prime position for if there was a default on the loans for
whatever.
Mm-hmm. I keep forgetting
the term for
prime. Keep forgetting it. Should have had the notes in front of me. Anyway, would be in the prime position if there was a default on the loan. We had some further discussions. It was a concern that was brought up here in public testimony as well. And the concern is that if there's multiple lenders, the state being one of them, that and a private lender might not either give a loan for the remainder of the project or have a really high interest rate. We did find out that this could be true, but we also found out that when the loans are underwritten, this process is gone through and it's examined whether if the state is the only lender, then they would be in that prime position. So there's the opportunity that the DNR and the Division of Agriculture already has to make that the case. So this is unnecessary. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mears. Are there any other questions or comments on Amendment 2?
And Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Representative Rauscher.
Representative Rauscher, to the chair, through the chair of the DNR, I was wondering, how is your opinion on this amendment?
Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, upon further review, we at DNR believe RLIF has, under current statute, the discretion to require first priority security when the board determines that it's necessary based on the characteristics of specific loans and borrowers. DNR has no problem with this amendment.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, very well. Are there any other questions or objections to Representative Sadler?
Thank you. Being not a financier, but I'll ask the question of the maker of, the, of this motion to the sponsor. Any priority, how far can any priority extend? I mean, my experience, you have a first position, subsidiary second position. I don't know how far down any priority. We're going to get down loan sharks or?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler. Not my set of numbers that I usually work with either, but this is something that they will be able to do in underwriting. Figure out which priority they are. And thank you so much for the proper term.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any other questions on this amendment number two? Okay, who did the objection?
I remove my objection.
Okay, Representative Rauscher removes his objection. Is there any objection to adopting amendment two? Seeing none, amendment two is adopted. Okay, next I have amendment three, which is numbered B13, which is Representative Rauscher.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number three.
Okay, amendment three is before us. Representative Rauscher, would you like to describe your amendment?
Did I get an objection?
Object.
Okay, sorry about that.
Vice Chair.
I knew today would be rough. I just knew it. Okay, Representative Sadler has objected. Representative Rauscher, please describe your amendment.
I thought it passed for a second. So
we can make this hard or easy, you know, guys.
Right. So what this amendment does on page 3, lines 7 through 10, it deletes that material and it inserts a number 2, which states may not, when added to the outstanding balance of other loans made under this chapter, exceed a total outstanding balance of $3 million, adjusted annually for inflation on January 1st of each year, based on the percentage increase in the consumer price index for all urban consumers for urban Alaska during the previous calendar year, as determined by the United States Department of Labor, Bureau of Statistics, what it's doing, it's going from 1 million to 3 million.
Very well. Are there any questions for Representative Rauscher on Amendment 3? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Just a question. So the language of the bill right now leaves the maximum outstanding balance up to the discretion of the Board of Ag by regulation, and this actually puts a hard dollar limit on. I'd like the idea. Thank you. So no objection, just comment.
Very well. Mr. Goodrum, does the department have any objection to this Amendment 3?
Thank you, Chair. For the record, Brent Goodrum, Deputy Commissioner. DNR had recommended allowing the Board of Agriculture to set this amount in regulation, and we felt that was an appropriate and efficient way to establish a new cap. However, this amendment would update the original $1 million cap set in the 1980s. The proposed $3 million cap with future adjustments for inflation should be sufficient if that's the will of the committee. I will note that we want to continue to review this language to ensure it meets the needs of ARLIF, but I believe it is in alignment with where we'd like to go. Lastly, I would recommend a conforming amendment changing the effective date for Section 3 from July 1, 2025 to July 1, 2024, as the board will no longer need time to establish a new cap in regulation. So essentially, it would allow this provision to take effect sooner, which would be important.
Okay, so that sounds like you're not objecting to Amendment 3.
Correct.
Okay, just want to be sure. All right. And is there any other discussion on Amendment 3? Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we need to make the magic words about conceptual amendment to Section 29, the effective date covering this section of the bill, Section 3, or is that something that they can do later on? Do we need to make any motion to adopt any conceptual, any changes in the effective date? I'm sorry. I withdraw that. That was a suggestion by the witness, so I'll shut up. Thanks.
Okay, brief it is because Okay, back on the record, House Resources. We would like to hear from Representative Sadler regarding conceptual Amendment 1 to Amendment 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the committee's indulgence. Mr. Chairman, I would move a conceptual Amendment 1 to Amendment number 3.
Such that. Yeah. Okay. Represent discussion.
Thank you. My proposed conceptual amendment is on page 11 of the bill, line 19, revise the words section 2 through 10 to sections 2 and 4 through 10. Further, the amendment would, on page 11, line 18 of the bill, after the word sections, add the word number 3. And the effect of that, Mr. Chairman, is just to advance the effective date of the new hard cap on ARLF loans, as discussed in the full amendment 3.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Rusher.
Yes, I'd just like to make sure it's okay with DNR.
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, we do approve of that conceptual amendment.
Okay, very well.
I remove my objection.
Representative Rusher removes his objection. Is there any further objections to Amendment 1 to Amendment 3? Hearing none, the conceptual Amendment 1 to Amendment 3 is adopted. We're back to the main amendment, 3. I'm looking for any objection to Amendment 3. Hearing none, Amendment 3 as amended is moved, is adopted. Thank you very much. The next one is Amendment 4, B10. Representative Rauscher, would you make a motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 4.
And do we have an objection for discussion? Anyone? I guess I can do it. I'll object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I ask everybody to change their eyes on to page 2, line 5, where there's a delete there, and you're inserting or, and then line 2, line 6, which is the cost of shipping to and within the state for the purposes listed in the subparagraph, or is inserted there, and then line 17 state for the purposes listed the subparagraph. It's just making all these match each other. They're kind of left hanging.
Okay, Mr. Goodrum, do you have any objection to that amendment?
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, we see this as a belt and suspenders amendment and have no objection.
Very well. Any other questions? Okay, I remove my objection. Is there any objection to adopting Amendment 4? Hearing none, Amendment 4 is adopted. Thank you. And then I have on my list Amendment 5, B3, and it says Representative Mears.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will not be offering this amendment at this time. It needs more work.
Okay, Amendment 5, B3. Has been removed by Representative Mears. And then next I have Representative Rauscher with a conceptual amendment 1.
Mr. Chairman, I move to offer a conceptual amendment to HB 296 33-GH2386/A.
Object.
Representative Sadler objects for discussion.
All right. Appreciate it. The purpose of this conceptual amendment is to amend HB 296 to include provisions that mandate the Division of Agriculture and the State Procurement Office to evaluate and enhance the process of institutional purchases aiming to increase the integration of Alaska grown products into the institutional contracts and procurement process. Boy, some tongue twisters in there, you know, for my mouth anyway.
Okay, thank you, Representative Rauscher. Is there any questions on Representative Rauscher's conceptual amendment? Representative Mears.
Thank you. I look forward to all the support for moving forward on getting more state purchases of local foods. Thank you.
You need to. I like the fist pumps.
Jack.
I have an objection by Representative Baker.
Purpose of discussion?
Yes.
Oh, I thought we already had that. Okay, sorry.
Chairman.
Any further discussion? Go ahead, Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, I'd like to ask the DNR commission, the DNR, what they think of this amendment.
Mr. Goodrum?
I know they understand it, and I think we just need to hear their position.
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, this is an area that we know we need to continue to do more work on, and the department is prepared to do that work. And so we're supportive of learning more about procurement and institutional buying power here in the state to create more markets for agriculture.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Record House Resources, Representative Rauscher.
Is there, I just don't know if there's any more discussion from anyone on this.
All right, seeing none, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real briefly, on line 11 of the conceptual amendment there, it says January 2025. I'm not sure if there's a missing date or if we should put first day of regular session, but that's just the only place that my, there's a little rough spot for me on page 11, the date. But that's it. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments on this conceptual amendment one? Okay, seeing none, do you remove your objection?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I remove my objection.
Okay, Representative Baker has removed his objection.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Representative Rauscher.
Good Chair, Mr. Chairman, I, at this time, think there's a little bit more work that needs to be done. We pointed out one small item, but I also listened to what the DNR has had to say. And I believe that they think that this is a positive move, but at this point, there's a lot of work to be done on it. I feel that it will get moved in the future once we iron out a few things. So at this moment, I'm going to pull back this motion and not offer it at this time.
Okay, so conceptual amendment one has been withdrawn by Representative Rauscher. And I'm going to take a brief at ease. Back on the record, House Resources, we will be setting aside House Bill 296 for further work on two amendments. So I can, let's see, release people that are testifying. Okay, the next item is House Bill 282 relating to land sales. So I bring HB 282 before the committee. This is our first hearing in House Resources. It has been previously moved through House Transportation. So we are looking for an introduction of the bill by the DNR, and we welcome Christy Collis to the table and to join Mr. Goodrum. So please state your name for the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair McKay, Vice Chair Rauscher, and members of the House Resources Committee. For the record, I'm Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum. Thank you for the opportunity to present some opening remarks for House Bill 282 on state land disposals. As you may well know, the state of Alaska manages over 100 million acres of land within the state and 65 million acres of tidelands, all belonging to the people of Alaska. The legislation soon to be presented to you in House Bill 282 would serve to help cut bureaucratic red tape, create flexibility and responsiveness within state departments, and open additional opportunities to put our state's lands to work for everyday Alaskans. At a very high level, the bill will serve to streamline land transfer functions from the state of Alaska that would allow the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Department of Education and Early Development to directly transfer land no longer needed for their original purpose to private parties, thus reducing bureaucratic administration and sometimes confusing multi-agency efforts. The bill will also work to create flexible leasing requirements that will allow the department to best decide when surveys are necessary for long-term leases to support applicants' needs and potentially lower costs for lessees. It will further incorporate adaptable road standards that allow for more economical pioneer road standards for land access and aligns right-of-way widths with municipal zoning. HB 282 will also provide necessary financial support for the development of state lands in preparation for sale to Alaskans, as well as extend the contract terms of state land sales to 30 years. The legislation will also help facilitate commercial land sales by introducing a new statute for commercial land leasing and sales, and lastly, will enable expanded agricultural use to be inclusive of activities such as bed and breakfast operations to help offset agricultural development costs. This is an important piece of legislation that can help create new opportunities in making Alaska's lands open to everyday Alaskans. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to present some opening remarks for House Bill 282, and I'll now turn it over to Director Christy Cullis.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair McKay and Vice Chair Rauscher and committee members. Through the chair, for the record, my name is Christy Cullis. I'm the director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water with the Department of Natural Resources out of Anchorage. Thank you again for inviting us to present on House Bill 282. As an overview, House Bill 282 would authorize the Department of Education and Early Development and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to directly dispose of surface land rather than transferring land to the Department of Natural Resources for conveyance, increases the cap on the Land Disposal Income Fund, updates and improves provisions relating to DNR's land disposal procedures, including amendments to broaden agricultural incidental uses, and adds a new statute relating to leases and sales for land for commercial purposes. The bill would amend the Department of Education and Early Development's authority under AS 1407030 and repeal and reenact the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities authority under AS 3520070. These amendments would streamline the conveyance of land by removing a multi-agency process where currently DEED and DOTNPF transfer title to DNR. Then DNR must go through a duplicative disposal process for final conveyance. These amendments would eliminate the need for DNR to include any restrictions that may be attached by DNR statutes in the process. This change would expand eligible recipients beyond just federal and state agencies and political subdivisions. Two recent examples where deed has transferred title to DNR for conveyance to a third party are on Japonski Island for Penrod Hall in Millersville, and a DOT example would be Telephone Hill right here in Juneau. The amendments still allow DOT to convey land back to DNR if requested, and if House Bill 282 becomes law, DEED and DOT would have direct disposal authority for lands that it obtained for public facilities for projects where the lands are no longer needed for such a project. DOT's current disposal regulations would apply. These actions would be conducted with DOT's public notice requirements that implement Article 8, Section 10 of the Alaska Constitution. Indeed, would need to comply with Article 8, Section 10 of the Alaska Constitution and Article 9, Section 6 of the Alaska Constitution for public purpose if and when it disposes of any real property.
Question, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I spent my time on the floor reviewing this, and I have some questions. I'm through the chair. I'm trying to understand a little bit more about the mechanisms of deed and DOT taking over the responsibility for selling land. I assume there's folks within the departments already that are acquiring land. Is that just an additional function they have, or are there other things that need to be developed in the department to be able to form this new function?
Through the chair, Representative Mears, so it would be very specific land. So it might be that there's an interest that someone's coming to them and they're no longer wanting that land. I think DOT does have the ability to put that land up for auction, but I do have a DOT and DED representative on the line if you'd like them to answer that question specifically.
Okay, who do we have on the line, Ms. Cullis?
We should have Lori Weed with DEED and potentially a Heather with DOT.
Okay.
Heather O'Cleary, I believe it is.
Lori or Heather, can you hear us?
I can hear you. This is Heather O'Cleary with DOT.
Okay, Heather with DOT. Did you hear Representative Mears' question?
Through the chair, this is Heather Upcry with the Department of Transportation. I did hear the question. Okay. Would you like me to go ahead and address that now?
Yes, please.
Okay, wonderful. Again, for the record, Heather Upcry, statewide right-of-way and realty chief for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We have other existing authorities, so we have a disposal process for those authorities under AS2, which is airports, and AS19 for highways. So disposing of property is not foreign to us. Currently, as you can see, the bill amends Title 35, which deals specifically with facilities properties. And although we'd have to create a new process specific to facilities, we would mirror that after our other processes. And we do have existing regulations for that process.
A follow-up, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I assume since you already have existing regulations, that's why there's not a fiscal note for, as I've been noting, $6,000 as a development of regulations line item we see very frequently because you already have them.
Through the chair, for the record, this is Heather Upcry for DOT. That's correct. We do have existing regulations. We would probably need to make some changes to those regulations, but it's probably within the regular purview of our normal updates, so we did not submit a fiscal note specific for that.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there someone from DEED available as well, Mr. Chair?
Yes, we have Lori Weed with the Department of Education. Lori, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir. Thank you.
I just want to make sure you heard the question, and can you please answer Representative Mears?
Absolutely. Thank you. Through the chair, this is Lori Weed, Acting Facilities Manager for the Department of Education and Early Development. And yes, we have existing authority to dispose of land parcels to certain entities already, so we have someone on staff who is already available to do that. And as you said, our fiscal note is just for regulations to update our process to accommodate the existing or additional authority.
Very well. Okay, Representative Mears appears to be satisfied. All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions at this point? Okay, Ms. Collis, please continue.
All right. The proposed, and for the record, Christy Collis, Director for Mine, Land, and Water. The proposed increase of the Land Disposal Income Fund limit to $12 million aims to bolster the fund balance, facilitating the department's efforts in land development and disposal while accounting for inflation since its inception in 2000. Concerns over a minimal fund balance resulting from fiscal sweeps, revenue expenditure disparities, and escalating land development costs underscore the necessity for this increase. The Department of Natural Resources is closely monitoring the fund's status and adjusting general fund expenses, including core costs. Elevating the cap is an initial measure to sustain the fund's effectiveness in supporting multi-year, large-scale development projects. The Capital Authority for Subdivision Improvements operates across multiple fiscal years with vigilant oversight of contractual agreements to prevent revenue shortfalls. However, funding constraints may hinder land preparation for future sales.
Ms. Collis, Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's some several more complicated sections. I just want to ask this question now. Two questions briefly. Just to clarify, Ms. Collis, Director Collis, this is not new appropriation. This is just a larger account that money can go into. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, correct.
And a follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
Director, what do you anticipate would be the most immediate impact or that we would see from expanding the LDIF fund balance limit?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, this is an initial step for us to be able to have the ability to have more of a fund balance for when we are able to kind of let that balance or that fund continue to grow. So that way we can actually develop areas with roads, because our subdivisions, a lot of times we do have to develop roads and that could be very costly. So some of the projects that we have on the shelf, we could actually take off the shelf if we were able to get this fund increase.
Thank you. Thanks, sir.
Okay. Any other questions at this point? Okay. Director Collis, please continue.
Okay. The bill proposes amendments to existing statutes to broaden the scope of agricultural activities beyond primary use. enabling ancillary endeavors like bed and breakfast operations to supplement and alleviate agricultural development expenses. While it's crucial to preserve agricultural land for its intended purpose, the finite availability of such land underscores the need for flexibility. Granting the director greater discretion in permitting diverse economic activities within agricultural farm developments can foster a more robust economic framework for the farmer and ripen greater success.
Representative Mears has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry to go back on the Land Disposal Income Fund. What I think I just heard you say, Ms. Collis, is that income from selling land will go into this fund and then be used for projects that are on the shelf. It's my understanding that funds need to have either an appropriation in or appropriation out. Are those projects that are on the shelf already been appropriated and not done, or am I missing some pieces here?
Through the chair, Representative Mears. So the money that comes in from sales of lands goes into the fund, and then we basically decide what projects we can afford to move forward with based off of how much money we have in that fund, what projects are a higher priority. And so if they're on the shelf, it's because maybe they were too high a cost and we didn't have that funding available right now to be able to expend that type of money, because we also pay for staffing out of the LDIF. So there's a lot of costs that are associated with developing land sales projects.
Follow up, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I've got some confusion because I thought that there needed to be an appropriation out. It sounds like we've got some answers coming here. Thank you.
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, there normally is a capital appropriation most every year associated with our land sales program. That is rolling authority that the legislature generally considers and approves and signs by the governor that allows us to expend monies out of the LDIF. And so, yes, we do recognize that the legislature has the power of the purse, and we do appreciate being able to put those to use to make more lands available here in the state.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for explaining that. There's lots to learn here and lots of little details in all the departments that are difficult to keep up with even when they have been explained to us before. So thank you for explaining that today.
Okay. Representative Rauscher has a question.
Thank you, through the chair. I was just wondering, here, going from 5 to 12, has 5 been possibly completely filled, and you think it'll be exceeded from now on? I guess I don't know how to say that. Where are we at with the reason here?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher. So currently, back in FY22, I believe it was, the fund no longer has a reverse sweep that occurs. We have been asking for this increase in the cap, and we kept for the LDIF to go to $12 million. But due to the reverse sweep not happening, the fund does not go over $5 million at this point. This is kind of a first step that we are asking to make. If in the future we were to be able to receive a reverse sweep or other actions, then we could potentially have this fund continue to grow so we could have more monies that come in from those receipts paid for by the land sales that we conduct for that LDIF cap.
Follow up, Rauscher.
Through the chair. So you probably see that $12 million will be spent in a year's time.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher. You know, that would be great if we could get to that point where we could spend that kind of money. But we also, it's like a bank account. As money's coming in, we're spending that money. So it depends on how much we're selling and how much we have in contracts on how much we can spend. So if, you know, we have a starting balance that's not, right now I think we usually start at about 900 and something thousand. We got an appropriation for the LDIF every year. And then that money comes in as we do our land sales contracts. And so it builds and then we spend and then it builds and then we spend. And so, you know, it's possible we'll get to $12 million, but that's something that we're working towards.
That's your buffer. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions at this point? Okay, Director Collis, please continue.
The division develops platted subdivisions for our land sales that include the development of roads. Some of our subdivisions are located within municipalities and boroughs, so we must follow the local platting authorities and receive approval on our planned development. The bill proposes amendments to AS 1930-080, allowing access roads to adhere to Pioneer standards instead of mandating all-weather, all-season roads. Additionally, it mandates that right-of-way widths align with municipal zoning requirements without necessitating a higher standard. DNR is not asking to be held to a lower standard for road development within boroughs and municipalities, but to be held to the same standard imposed on private citizens or other land developers. During the planning process, it is imperative to know the level of road development that will be required to ensure the project is not cost prohibitive. This amendment clarifies the requirements for earnest money deposits and contract termination while extending the maximum contract term from 20 to 30 years. By replacing foreclosure with termination, the terminology is more consistent, aligning with administrative processes rather than banking terms. It also introduces a definition for public auction, paving the way for online auctions. While traditional DNR sale methods like outcry auctions, lottery, over-the-counter, and derelict sales, direct sales, will persist, the defining of public auctions enhances the structure of online platforms. Also, through a best interest finding, the department can require payment in full within 120 days from the sale of the land with infrastructure in excess of $10,000. This amendment protects the state from receiving back the infrastructure in a poor condition and higher liability.
Okay, Representative Rauscher has a question.
Real quick one through the chair. So foreclosure hasn't happened in the past?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher. So we terminate contracts. So we do terminate. It's terminology. Foreclosure is more of a banking term. And since we do finance individuals when they're purchasing lands from us, we have a contract with them, and we would terminate that contract. We wouldn't foreclose upon them. So it's more of a getting the correct language for us not being a financial institution.
So I rephrase through the chair.
Yeah, Representative Rauscher.
Had to terminate.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, yes, we have terminated contracts.
Thank you.
Okay, continue, please.
The bill proposes several amendments aimed at streamlining processes and reducing barriers to development on state land. This would grant the commissioner, through a best interest finding, the option under Alaska Statute 3804045B to determine the necessity of a cadastral survey, providing flexibility while maintaining state oversight. The bill eliminates the requirement for surveys for long-term leases under Alaska Statute 3805070. This change acknowledges that surveys for leases exceeding 10 years can pose significant hurdles for industry seeking land for development, particularly in sectors such as grazing, renewable energy, and agriculture. This amendment aims to promote economic growth by reducing unnecessary administrative burdens and upfront expenses associated with land development processes.
Okay, Representative Mears has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I understand that our surveying satellites, aerial, whatever, is getting much better over time, but it's still not quite there, and there's places where there's larger than errors than others. Is there a requirement for a setback for either land clearing or fencing or any of physical infrastructure to allow for any potential discrepancies in the future? For example, if someone wanted to go into a lease, they built some physical infrastructure, it wasn't actually on their property, their lease that they were doing. So I'm just looking to see if there's a buffer in there to reduce conflicts in the future whether it does get to the point of a physical on-the-ground survey.
Through the chair, Representative Mears, so we don't have anything in the statute that has a buffer. That would be something that we could do through the best interest finding, or we could do per regulations if this statute were to pass.
Thank you.
Okay. Please continue.
Currently, the department has two land sales programs for personal and recreational uses. This proposed bill creates a new statute providing for the disposal of state land deemed suitable for commercial development through a lease-to-sale program. In this new program, the commissioner would either identify areas that are suitable for commercial land sales or receive nominations from the public for areas that would be desirable for commercial development. A best interest finding and public notice of the decision to offer the land for commercial development would be part of the process. Lands must be classified for disposal, such as settlement. If land is not classified properly, the commissioner can consider reclassification through a public process that is outlined in existing statute that requires a decision and a public notice. An interested party can nominate land or apply to develop lands by responding to the commissioner's request for proposals. The application must be submitted by a deadline set by the commissioner and include the type of commercial development proposed, location, description, and size of parcel that cannot exceed 20 acres. If only one suitable proposal exists, a lease can be issued. If there is a competing interest for the same area, a public auction or sealed bid will be held. The lease would be awarded to the highest bidder as long as the project is found to be in the state's best interest. A lease would be issued up to 5 years and could be renewed once for an additional 5 years if the lease is in good standing. A lessee can apply to purchase all or a portion of the lease land at any time during the lease term. A lease can be terminated, and a sale could be denied if the leased area is not being used in a manner required by the lease. If the lessee decides to purchase the parcel and the state approves the sale, the lessee could be required to pay for survey and appraisal, and the previous lease payments can be applied to the fair market value purchase price. This section does require that easements and rights of way be reserved across parcels to ensure traditional access is maintained.
Representative Mears.
Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the line about state land nominated by the public. I assume there's a process for that, and the public is likely to be an interested party for those lands. Could you describe a little bit more what that process would look like for determination if it would be offered up?
Through the chair, Representative Mears. So the idea is if somebody does nominate an area, they can nominate up to 640 acres. And the idea behind this was to not say exactly where in that 640 acres maybe they were interested. I know that we've had people come to us that are interested in this. They're like, well, I'm going to nominate it, and then I'm going to have to do a competitive process, and they're going to know exactly where I want to be. And so that's where we thought, well, if we do a 640-acre area, we could put it out for public. Basically, we'd have to do a decision deciding if that's an area that's in the best interest of the state to use for commercial development. And then we would go out and see if there was any other interested parties for that area, so there would be competition. If there was no other interested parties, that person that nominated it, as long as they applied, if they were the only person, they would then be able to move into a lease as long as they followed all the stipulations and statutes that we have in place.
Okay, please continue.
That completes my presentation. I do have a sectional analysis if you'd like me to go through that quickly.
Yes, we probably should read that into the record. How fast can you read?
I'm going to try to go really fast. I don't know. We'll see. All right. Section 1 amends AS 1407030A pertaining to the powers and duties of the Department of Education and Early Development, allowing them to dispose of land directly to a private party rather than just to federal agencies, state agencies, and political subdivisions. Section 2 amends AS 1930080 pertaining to construction standards and maintenance of the state access roads. The amendment allows for access roads constructed under AS 1930060, 1930100 to be not necessarily suitable for all weather use. Section 3 repeals and reenacts AS 3520070 relating to Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Authority to vacate or dispose of land. The reenacted section would allow DOT and PF to dispose of land to third party directly according to the terms, standards, and conditions established by the DOT-PF Commissioner. Section 4 amends AS 3804022 pertaining to the State Land Disposal Income Fund. Currently under subsection A, the portion of the fund that exceeds $5 million must be deposited in the State General Fund. This bill would raise the amount to $12 million. Section 5 amends AS 3804045B to remove long-term leases under AS 3805070 from the requirement to accomplish an official cadastral survey. Section 6 adds a new subsection C to AS 3804045 to provide that the DNR commissioner may require an official cadastral survey under 045B before the issuance of a long-term lease under AS 3805070. Section 7 repeals and reenacts 3805055, which establishes public auction or sealed bid as the default methods for sale of state land The reenacted version divides the section into four subsections to improve readability. Each sealed bidder is required to submit an earnest money deposit of 5% of the bid amount, and bidders who fail to enter into contract to purchase or default in the payment of the bid amount will forfeit the deposit. Section 8 amends AS 3805065A for land sale contracts to have a longer term from 20 to 30 years. Sections 9 through 12 amend AS 3805065C, D, E, and F to replace the word foreclosure with termination. Sections 13 through 14 amend AS 3805065 for consistency pertaining to contracts for state land disposals. New subsections J and K require an earnest money deposit by persons applying to purchase land by means other than public auction or sealed bid. The earnest money requirement in cases of auction or bid is addressed in AS 3805055 as amended by the bill. The new subsections would apply a similar earnest money requirement to applicants for other methods of purchasing land under AS 3805. The commissioner may, upon a best interest finding, determine that the purchase price for a parcel of land with existing improvements valued at greater than $10,000 must be paid in full with 120 days of closing. Section 15 amends AS 3805 by adding a new section, AS 3805-86, pertaining to leases and sales of land for commercial development. Section 16 amends AS 3805-321D to allow uses on conveyed agricultural land that are not inconsistent with and do not limit its use for agricultural purpose. Section 17 amends AS 3805-965 to add the definition of public auction to expressly include online auctions in addition to oral outcry auctions. Section 18 repeals AS 3805-065B regarding the contract of sale for land sold under AS 3805-057 and the terms of the installment payments. This is a conforming amendment to account for the changes made under Section 13 of the bill. Section 19 provides an immediate effective date under AS 0110090C. And that is the end of the section.
Somebody get the lady a glass of water. Thank you, Director Collis. I really didn't intend for that to be like a torture test, but thank you very much for going quickly through that. I'm glad that there are no questions on that. Well, Representative Rauscher.
Okay, so how many land disposal programs does the state have now? Do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, I don't have those off the top of my head, but when it comes to just our land sales, we have two. We do have others for preference rights, but when it comes to our specific ones that we do over, like sales for auctions, there's two currently.
And a quick follow-up. None of this land is mental health trust land, right?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay, and it could be anywhere in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, yes, it could be anywhere in Alaska, but it does need to be properly classified. Currently, just lands classified as settlement lands would be on the table, and then we would have to go through a separate process if somebody was to nominate lands that were not classified settlement.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Please continue, Director Collins.
All right. So this is the last slide. This is the proposed. This proposed bill creates a new statute providing for the disposal of state lands suitable for commercial development through a lease-to-sell program. To implement the new commercial leasing disposal program, the Department of Natural Resources will need to evaluate land nominations, identify land offering areas, prepare documents relating to planning and classification, reclassification of lands to be offered, prepare best interest findings under AS 3805-035E, title due diligence, title report issuance, and provide appraisals of the land under AS 3805-840. We're asking for 5 positions. In FY 2025, that would be $655,400, and the further outset years would be $630,400 annually for 5 positions, 2 permanent full-time natural resource specialist 3s, 2 permanent full-time natural resource specialist 2s, and 1 appraiser.
Okay. Thank you, Director Collis, and we really appreciate your going through those quickly. Any questions from the members on this presentation? Okay, I'm recommending an amendment deadline of Tuesday, February 27th at 5 p.m. And I'm advised to see if that's okay with everyone. All right, seeing no objection, amendment deadline Tuesday, February 27th at 5 p.m. And I will now set HB 282 aside. And thank you very much, Mr. Goodrum and Director Collis, for your work today helping us with this bill. Next up is House Bill 223 related to Cook Inlet royalty. We now bring HB 223 back before the committee. And Representative Rauscher, can I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute?
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record here at House Resources with House Bill 223. And Mr. Representative Rauscher, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt Work Order 33-LS0886/S as our working document for House Bill 223.
And I'll object for the purpose of the discussion, and my staff, Mr. Ed King, will come forward and explain the changes in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff to Representative McKay. Mr. Chairman, the CS here is an effort to combine the ideas between the governor's royalty bill and the sponsor of this bill's ideas. The bill it has about seven changes. I can just read through them and take any questions that you have. So Section 1 was added to expand the commissioner's list of required actions. That's because there are determinations and regulations that need to be made. The second change is this bill introduces a new subsection. The previous bill already had a subsection MM. This version expands that same section to include oil and also to provide a little bit more clarity. You can find the changed language on the CS, page 8, beginning on line 27. This CS also adds another subsection under MM, which is just a definition, providing a little bit more clarity what it means when we're talking about new gas. And then there, as a general matter, the original bill had reduction to production taxes. This CS removes those provisions. And then the next change is there's a new bill section that includes the calculation of prevailing market value. This was just to clarify some of the provisions that were up on change two, giving the commissioner authority or a directive to calculate the prevailing value for gas so that there's no accusations of exploitation. Change six, the transition language was added. This is to allow the commissioner to modify the lease agreements themselves to incorporate these changes. And then there was an effective date for those production tax provisions that is no longer necessary and was deleted.
Okay, do members have any questions for Mr. King? All right, seeing none, I will extend the amendment deadline on HB 223 to Monday, February 26th at noon, and set the bill aside. No?
You didn't remove your objection.
I will also remove my objection. Thank you. One more. Okay, House Bill 177 is our last topic for today related to the critical minerals report. We now bring HB 177 before the committee. And again, Representative Rauscher, can I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt Work Order 33-LS07444/P as our working document for House Bill 177.
Okay, and I will object for the purposes of the discussion. And Katie McCall, staff to Representative Sadler, and Representative Sadler will come forward and explain the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Dan Sadler, House District 24, Chugaikiga River, and my staff, Katie McCall. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make my best stab to explain the changes in House Bill 177 from version A to the CS, which is work draft B. If members have before you, real briefly, in generally speaking, this second version of this bill tries to broaden the focus of the intention of the bill away from one particular end and broaden it. So the first section changes, removes the words the global energy transition from the title, such that we don't want to limit the scope of the bill. In section 1, essentially, the changes say that we are not going to require the governor's office, but in fact, the more appropriate, the broader state of Alaska agencies to fulfill the mission of the bill in general. Version B also removes some references to the end products that are going to be used. It broadens the statement on the uses of critical and essential minerals beyond just the energy uses, and although there's an important part of it, they are involved in many more aspects of the modern technological world. The changes in Section 1, Subsection B, on page 2 of the bill, starting at the top, the earlier version had a specific proscribed list of minerals, and we're concerned with the reports we're requiring of government what definition of critical and essential minerals would they adhere to, and we went to the most broad and the most inclusive and the most up-to-date, which is the U.S. Department of Energy and the U.S. Geological Survey. They are consistent in most respects. There are some places where there's not overlap, so we wanted to have access to both those lists, and those are updated most years, so that will be the most current list for definitions of those critical minerals. The next change in subsection B expands the list of stakeholders that the Department of Natural Resources may consult with as they prepare their work in this report to include Alaska Native corporations, again, as stakeholders that can be consulted with. Moving on to Section 2 of the bill, which is on page 2, starting line 17, it makes probably the most significant change between the earlier version and this version. It removes the tasking of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development in favor of tasking the Minerals Commission with looking at more of the commercial aspects and the regulatory aspects. And the Minerals Commission does what it does well, that is, identify regulatory inhibitors to development of resources in Alaska. So we thought this was, frankly, right up the Minerals Commission's alley, so we tasked them with this as well. And Mr. Chair, those are the changes in version A to B, and we'd be glad to explain these changes or amplify further. Thank you.
Okay, is there any questions from members? All right. I am going to ask if members need time to draft any amendments, or we could move the bill today. Representative Mears?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that this needs to be amendment, but I would like there, as we're looking at items in this committee, what additional energy uses we might be identifying so that we've got more opportunities for market development. One of the things I've noted is that when we're talking about our natural gas needs, the demand curve is flat. And if we're able to identify additional opportunities for energy needs, that might help with our energy development and investment as well. Although I'll leave it up to Representative Sadler if he feels that's something that should be included in this report. Thank you.
All right. Representative Sadler, do you accept that?
I would. Through the chair, Representative Mears, I do agree. And again, the hope is to broaden, is to not limit the scope of this study work and report to the legislature specifically and only to energy. Critical and essential minerals will play an important part in development of new technology for energy, for transportation, for information science, for defense, you know, all those kinds of things. So we thought rather than limit the scope of the report to one particular end, we would broaden it. And certainly, for the record, these uses include new energy.
Representative Mears.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sadler, I think you misunderstood. Oh. It was with the development of exploration for critical minerals, if there would be additional energy demands that would be needed from the state so that we can identify a larger market for energy development. But I'm not sure that we need an amendment for it. It's just a clarification there.
Thank you. Through the chair, I appreciate the broad thinking, and I'm hoping possibly with other bills before us, we will have more energy available to do all kinds of good things in Alaska. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Is there any other questions on House Bill 177? All right. Seeing none, Representative Sadler, maybe you should come back to your normal position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. McCall, for your contributions today.
Anytime.
That way.
It all pays the same, Katie. Okay. I would like to have a motion to move the bill. If there are no objections, Representative Rusher.
Mr. Chairman, I move the report, committee substitute for HB 177, work order 33-LS0744/B from the committee with individual recommendations and two attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, without objection, committee substitute for House Bill 177, Resources, is reported from the Resources Committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and authority for legal services to make technical and conforming changes. So thank you very much. I just have a couple of other announcements while we pass around the paperwork, Trevor. There's another bill, HB 222. We want to set an amendment deadline for 222 of Thursday, February 29th at 5 p.m. Again, that's 222, Thursday, February 29th at 5 p.m. Our next meeting will be Monday, February 26th at 1 p.m. I want to thank everyone for your endurance today. That was a lot of material to cover. And I want to wish you all to have a great weekend. And we are adjourned at 2:57 p.m.